And now, courtesy of the 11L Network, it's LF Midwood.
LF Midwood.
And the Midwood Files. With the LF Midwood Experience. Here on Radio New York International.
To the Midwood Files. My name is LF Midwood. Wait, did I get that right? Yeah. Ew, that was close. Anyway, welcome, and it's, I guess this is this two or three in a row? I think it's two in a row. Yeah, I think it's the second one in October. I'm trying to get all five shows in October. I'm really trying. I'm feeling okay. I got no major maladies at the moment, which is good. What is it? Is it a week? Yeah, it's a week. I haven't had any weed. I have not had any weed in a week. And I feel all right. I feel okay. I'm not anywhere near as annoyed as I thought I was going to be, which is good. I actually had to go back and watch it again. That's how stoned I was. Last Friday, I think Hocus Pocus 2 premiered on, premiered on the Disney Plus on Friday night. So I got three big doobies, and I knew I was going to stop smoking at around midnight-ish or so. So we started to watch the movie, and I started smoking, and I was pretty much done with the weed by the time the movie was over, and I couldn't remember anything. I swear to you, I had to go back and like in the middle of this week, I went back and I watched it again, and it was acceptable. I had no issues. I know, you know, people, like, they get so emotional over stuff, especially like stuff that's like childhood, you know, because the original was obviously out in 92. I was 22 when the movie came out, and most people I know who liked the movie were also in their 20s when the movie came out. So, you know, people get emotional. They're like, "Oh, but they didn't do that," and it's just calm down. It's a kids' movie. You understand? You understand? You know, people get they get like spastic. It's like, I don't know. I don't understand. It's just a freaking movie. So I liked it. I'd give it an A. You know, maybe a B plus. It'd be interesting to see what they do going forward. They were talking about possibly, some sort of examining of the sisters as they were children into adults. You know, and I gotta say again, if I haven't said this. The three actresses who played the young Sanderson sisters were really good. I mean, they were like really good. So let's hope that any projects that might involve the younger sisters or sisters in a younger depiction includes those actresses. I also saw I saw the Hellraiser movie last night. That premiered last night on Hulu. It was all right. I mean, it was a lot better than, like, a lot of those sequels that were made in, like, Eastern Europe, you know? You know, when Carrie Wuerer shows up, you're pretty much done. That being said, it was all right. I got to tell you, the scariest thing that I've seen this season, and I know American Horror Story is coming back. I don't know who the actors are yet, but one of the alumni, Evan Peters, portrayal of Jeffrey Dahmer. It's probably the scariest thing I've seen all year. You know, all season, I should say. I don't know about all year. but all season. And then there was something else. They had some of the recorded interviews with Dahmer and a separate kind of thing that was a three-episode thing that we wound up watching last night after we watched the 10th episode of the Dahmer thing. I was scared. It was scary. It's scary that it could happen. Let's just put it that way. I mean, all the level of inept, you know, he was so close and had more than a few contacts with law enforcement that you would have think that somebody would have figured something out a lot sooner. I think his count was 17 people he killed, and he kept pieces of them and cooked them and he ate them. You know, that stuff's scary alone, you know. But when you think about like what enabled him to be able to continue on his spree, you know, I don't know why the guy wasn't proven to be, you know, insane, or at least insane at the time of the crimes. Because it was like a 2-year spree, I think. But nope, they found him. Capable of understanding what was going on, and they put him to trial, and he got like 17 or 15 life sentences, and then ultimately he was murdered by another prisoner who was mentally ill as well in prison. So, and then there was this thing, and then this I didn't know about. I don't know if this was covered in the news, where the body was cremated, but they kept his brain. They kept his brain. Because they figured maybe they could study it for science, you know, they could send it over to one of the universities and have it studied, as they did with John Wayne Gacy's brain. And John Wayne Gacy's brain showed to be normal, in at least in the physiological aspects. So what they had to go to court. Dahmer's parents went to court, and Dahmer's father won, and the brain was destroyed. It was cremated. So that's it. That's all. I haven't really had a chance to watch a whole lot of stuff. You know, I always want to. There's so much stuff around this time of year that I love, because I love this season. This is like my Christmas, quite frankly. Although I like Christmas, I'm not knocking Jesus in any sense of the imagination. But I do like the Halloween season, and you know, again, the whole month of October. This is why, you know, stopping, you know, quitting weed, staying off the marijuana, the cannabis for October, it's a bit of a hardship. It is a little bit. I could have picked another month, but my doctors just won't shut up. So I figure I give them their 30 days, and we'll see. A little heartburn, actually, and we'll see if there's any significant changes in what's going on. But for 30 days prior, I was smoking and I didn't get sick either. So that doesn't exactly fit the profile of the cannabis syndrome there that I thought I might have. I'm still not 100% sure. I'll get back to you. There's a couple of tests they want to run on me, probably within the next month or so. So we'll be able to hopefully figure out what's going on. And I have an appointment with neurology, a neurologist on, I think, the 12th. So I'm interested in seeing what if anything at all pops up at a norm on that, because I've for a long time wondered if I had any neurological issues, and now I get to find out. And what is it? It's today's the 9th, so Columbus Day is on Monday. Now I got a couple articles on Columbus Day. I got two of them. The biggest thing about this Columbus Day is I'm coming out of retirement, and I'm actually cooking. I'm going to make some sauce, you know, with the meatballs and the sausage and the sausage and the canned tomatoes, and you know, the whole I haven't done it in a long time. I haven't been in the kitchen. There's a new set of knives in there that we picked up a while back, maybe 6 months ago or so. I haven't even had a chance to play with those yet, so I'm kind of looking forward to it. I got a whole bunch of cans of San Marzanos, and I don't know if I want to use them or not. I'll probably wind up using something more basic, because the San Marzanos, I find they're light, and I don't know if the acid is less. It's that whole Vesuvius thing, I guess. I don't really know. I like them, but I don't associate them heavily with like fat, you know, the fat that you get from the meatballs and the sausage. I have sweet and hot, in case you're wondering. and a couple of boxes of rigatoni, and I got some rolls because I figure I make some sandwiches at some point in time. But it's a big deal. I haven't, the producer's trying to talk me into using her Chef of the Future stuff she's got there. She's got all that ninja stuff. She's got like that slow cooker and stuff, you know. Put the whole thing in there, and she's like, but if you put it in a pot, you're going to have to stir it. And I'm like, yeah, what's your point? So, you know, when you start taking direction from wasps on how to make your sauce, you know you're in trouble. So I'm going with the big stock pot, the biggest pot in the house I got, set myself up with the mise en place. That's the knife work there. And I got to take a picture of it. I know. I think it's up on my, for those of you interested, up on my Instagram. I think there's, you can get to that through lfmidwood.com. It's over on the right-hand side under social media. Or you can, I guess, under Instagram, you just put in LF Midwood, and I guess I'll pop up. There's what I call my man pan, which is, it's just, I guess it's, wow, what is it? Like, it's 13 wide, and it's like 20-something long. It's a big-ass cast iron pan. It's made out of country. I think it's Chinese. I'm not 100% sure. But it's held, unless it's got rust on it at the moment, it's held up pretty good. Never had any issues with it, and it's huge. It's a huge, flat surface it's only like 2-3 inches deep. Oh, the heartburn is killing me. Oh, just like last week, it's kind of weird. And I had the same thing for dinner last week, so maybe that's got something to do with it. I'm not really sure. I had some pot pies for dinner, it's store-bought pot pies, little salt bombs, you know. I make pot pie. I haven't done it in a long time, but I've made it from scratch. So the pan is pretty interesting, and it lets me put a whole bunch of stuff in it without crowding it, so I can kind of brown my meat real quick. I can brown the meat. The meat needs to be browned. Yeah. So it's a big deal, actually. I haven't been anywhere near the kitchen in any sort of productive way in a long time. It's been years. I think the last thing I actually made was sausage and peppers. So that should tell you where I'm at. And that's like, 3 years ago, maybe even more than that. So I'm kind of looking forward to it. I got to get up early on Monday. The whole Columbus thing, it's still Columbus Day here. And I don't think it's going to change anytime soon. It's still Columbus Day in New York. I know there's been a rise of what they call, Indigenous Persons Day, I guess. I think like somewhere like the Dakotas, I forget whether it's North or South Dakota, they actually do a couple other states have followed suit. You know, all those commie states, the Pinkos, the Pinko commie bastards. Yeah, all those states have switched over to Indigenous Persons Day, which is really funny because, they make it seem like everything was just fine before the Europeans showed up. Just fine. You know, all the Indians would get along and they smoke their peace pipes and smoke a little hemp in there, and they'd be going kumbaya and they'd be dancing around their little fires, and then all of a sudden the Europeans show up and everything goes to shit. But they don't, it's not true. That's what they would have you believe. That's what the lefties would have you believe. You know, those Pinkos, they would have you believe that. They would. But it's not true. Indians have been killing Indians for a long ass time. You know, when we look at like South America, you know, when we look at the rise of various empires there, you know, and not for nothing, let's cut their heads off and dump them into the, you know, as sacrifices, you know, the idea of like human sacrifice. Yeah. Okay. So there was definitely human sacrifice in South America for sure. And we know the Indians here, meaning when I say here in North America, were often at war with each other and killing each other over whether it be, I don't know, grazing rights or whatever the hell Indians kill each other over. Maybe they're upset because they didn't have cell phones and bacon. I don't really know. I'm not sure, you know. You know what? Not for nothing. All these indigenous people, not for nothing. If the Spaniards subsequently after Columbus never set foot on North America proper. I believe it's a Hispaniol, which is now a Dominican Republican in Haiti. He was made governor there, and he was, everybody had slaves back then. You know, it's the Jews and the Schwarzes would have you believe that slavery was just something that happened to certain people. You know, like the, again, there's a, you know, with the Schwarzes, but no, in the old world, and we're now talking like 500 years ago, slavery was very common. Very common. When Columbus returned in one of his trips back to Spain, he brought gold and other stuff and slaves. He brought in slaves. It was very, and not for nothing, some of the Indian tribes of North America had slaves. They had other Indians that they had captured and subjugated. I always love that word, subjugated. to their will. And they were. It's a fact. I'm not, you know, I wish I, you know, the lefties, oh, that's right, no, it was a redskin paradise. What are you doing? Speaking of paradise, Coolio passed. I'm very sorry to hear that. I think it was in between shows. I'm not 100% sure, or if I missed it last week. I just reminded myself, because, you know, it's all stream of consciousness here. So Coolio passed. I'm really sorry to hear that. I always like the, I'll see you when you get there. If you ever get there. So, yeah, it's one of my favorites. And, of course, Gangster's Paradise. But, yeah, they would have you believe that. The lefty pinkos would have you believe that everything was just great until Columbus showed up. It was, like, wonderful. You know, if things were so wonderful, then how come the Vikings didn't stick around? Anybody know? Raise your hand. Yeah, I think it's pretty pretty obvious at this point in time. Through historians and pulling stuff up, there's been various signs of them here and there. Even the friggin' tower in Newport, Rhode Island, there's a thought that that might have been built by the Vikings on their southern journey. I guess it would be south, right? Yeah, it would be south. North America would be south from where they were anyway. There's a lot of garbage surrounding it, and I think Columbus is unfairly vilified. There used to be a statue outside of, right next to, I guess it's where Elmwood and friggin' Reservoir meet. The closest thing that would be a landmark to me would be my drugstore, my Walgreens there, is right, there's a little square, there's a little thing there, and there used to be a statue of Columbus in this little square pointing. I don't know what direction he was pointing in. I'd have to think about that. But it was cool. It was there for a long time, you know? And in recent years, because all these social Marxists would get the minorities all wound up, you know, wind them up, they were throwing paint on it. They were throwing paint on it all the time, and it was like, ugh. And then what they did was they covered it. And I don't think that helped, because they were still throwing paint on it. And I think, like, year before last, I think, or maybe even last year, before the second Monday of October, they removed it entirely. It's no longer there. Now, this neighborhood is mostly, I talk about living in a ghetto, and I do, but there's probably far more Latinos, whether they be Dominican or otherwise, here where I live. And then the Schwarz is after that, as far as number of people, you know, as far as population, just like prison, oddly enough. I mean, the statue is really in the wrong place. I think they should have erected it what's the Federal Hill, the Federal Hill section, which is like where most of the Italians classically had lived, and that's where your Italian restaurants up there. It's like they're it's Little Italy. It's probably not for nothing. In its heyday, it definitely could not compare to the Little Italy in New York City. But the Little Italy in New York City is now like two blocks, and then all of a sudden you're in WOHOP territory. So, there's nothing wrong with those Chinese restaurants, don't get me wrong. I think Federal Hill would qualify as a little bit more of a built-out, but only by secession. Like, and when I say secession, only by the fact that New York City, I don't know what happened there. They should have put it there, or they should move it there now, quite frankly. You know, there's a pretty large Italian pop here. There always kind of has been. And then after that, you know, you got the Portuguese, which are probably more Italian than Spanish. I don't know. It depends on how you look at it, I guess. Somewhere in between the two, as far as I'm concerned, culturally speaking. So, they took the statue down. They moved it. You know, and again, just because they got people riled up on a bunch of bullshit is what it comes down to. Let me see what I got on Columbus. Hang on. Some other stuff, too. But... Here we go. This is the Daily Citizen. This is the left hates Christopher Columbus. Here are five reasons why we should still celebrate Columbus Day. Because, like I said, some places have been replacing it with Indigenous Persons Day. Other people have been running it side by side, even though Indigenous Persons Day is not a federal holiday, while Columbus Day is. Anyway. Most of us can remember the day when Americans still seemed to like Christopher Columbus. Yet in the past few decades, something has changed. Certain states and localities have moved away from celebrating Christopher Columbus, and now celebrate Indigenous Persons Day, or People's Day. According to a recent poll, hang on for a sec. I need something to drink before I get too deep into this. Still got to get something to play in the background when I'm drinking. I'm going to do that. According to a recent poll, 79% of college students support such a change. See, those are the indoctrinated. They've been indoctrinated by those pinkos. And the D.C. City Council recently approved a measure to abolish Columbus Day and replace it with Indigenous Peoples Day. Ironically, the District of Columbia is named after, you guessed it, Christopher Columbus. The left's hatred of Columbus is predicated on the idea that he represents the tyrannical Western force that colonized the Americas at the expense of those already living here. Mm-hmm. But in reality, Christopher Columbus is an American hero, and he should remain as such. Here are five reasons why we should still celebrate Columbus Day. Number one, Columbus personified the American spirit. Columbus was a brilliant man in his own right. The Encyclopedia Britannica describes him as a master navigator and admiral. He sailed to numerous places, beginning his career as a merchant marine. He sailed to Iceland and Ireland in 1477 and to Madeira, in 1478. Between 1482 and 1485, Columbus traded along the Guinea and Gold Coast of tropical West Africa and made at least one voyage to Elmina, Ghana. And after all this, he made the four transatlantic voyages to the New World, beginning with his first famed voyage in 1492. Americans, for all our faults, love adventure. From early colonial exploration to our push westward with manifest destiny, to our more modern conquest, to outer space and landing on the moon. Americans seem to have an innate desire to push the boundaries and discover new places, thus began with the spirit of Christopher Columbus. Yeah, 100% true. You know, an idea of manifest destiny, though the left will argue about as well, too. And you have to remember, and I'll get this out of the way early, before I get to the rest of the four reasons why we should still celebrate Columbus Day. The idea becomes with expansion, you know, from Europe to the New World. The idea becomes I use this in regards to talking about the U.S. government's expansion westward as well. Wow, it's called eminent domain. Look it up. Look up eminent domain. For those of you who have a problem with Christopher Columbus, just look up eminent domain. Okay, your court, the left side of the court, as a matter of fact, voted for eminent domain from a constitutional standpoint. Remember, it was that case in, I think it was Connecticut, that finally made it up to the high court. It's the basic idea is that they could, if you're in the way, they can move you for the greater good. And you say, well, what's that greater good? And I call that greater good cell phones.
and bacon. Okay? Cell phones and bacon. Great or good. Get out of the way. So, on to number two. Columbus undertook adventure for God and country. After Columbus returned to Spain from his first voyage to the Americas in 1493, he wrote in his letter to King Ferdinand and Queen Isabella, they manifest in the greatest affection towards all of us, exchanging valuable things for trifles. Content with the very least thing or nothing at all. I gave them many beautiful and pleasing things which I had brought back with me for no return whatsoever in order to win their affection, and that they might become Christians and inclined to love our king and queen and princes and all the people of Spain. Columbus usually treated Native Americans kindly and brought them gifts in order to win them favor. He brought with him a letter from King Ferdinand to the Taino Arawak Indians. The king wrote, "We, in his name, will receive you with love and charity, respecting your freedom and that which your wives and sons and your rights of possession. We shall not compel you to baptize unless you, informed of the truth, wish to convert to our holy Catholic faith." Columbus's drive for exploration was religious. Jarrett Stepman writes in the Daily Signal, "While Columbus and certainly his Spanish benefactors had an interest in the goods and gold he could return with from what they thought to be Asia, the explorer's primary motivation was religious." That's kind of interesting. I don't know. I mean, they obviously would bring Christianity with them. I don't think that was a question. And I think being good Christians, they would attempt to open a door for the local savages to understand the gift of Christ. I think that goes without saying, and I don't think there's necessarily anything wrong with it, which is, you know, a lot better than you could say for a lot of other situations that other religions have been in, where you basically join by the sword. And it's funny, we talk about Columbus and religion for a moment here. Isabella and Ferdinand they created the Inquisition. It started under them. They started it, and it was to separate the wheat from the chaff, as they say. And a lot of Jews were forced to convert. And I think in secret, a lot of them continued to remain Jewish. But there was a big push. And then we obviously know what the Inquisition turned into as far as the witch hunts and various other unpleasantries. Yeah, you know, you got to break a couple of eggs. You know what I mean? So let me get back to, what is this? Is this three? Yeah. If Columbus is off limits to celebrate, so are indigenous peoples. Let's check this out. The main reason some leftists don't want to celebrate Christopher Columbus is because his actions supposedly led to the genocide of Native American peoples. Yet what is really discussed is the barbaric genocide perpetrated by Native American tribes from Mexico to Peru against other Native American tribes before the arrival of the Europeans. Again, Jarrett Stepman writes in his book, The War on History, "What is never explained is why so-called indigenous peoples are worthy of celebration if Columbus is not. Pre-Columbian civilizations from Mexico to Peru were nearly responsible for brutal violence on a large scale, long before Columbus arrived on the shores of the New World, including human sacrifices, even of children, sometimes by tearing out victims' still-beating hearts." We know that to be the case in several Mexican empires of Mexico. The Algonquin peoples, located in present northeast United States, often took slaves off of other tribes. Yet despite all the gruesome sacrifice and slavery, some will still wish to celebrate Indigenous Peoples Day. Not if we can't celebrate Christopher Columbus Day. So, I talked about that before I even started reading the article. Yeah, it's pretty well documented. The stuff the left, the Pinkos don't want you to know. They don't want you to know that stuff. They don't, you know, again, everything was great. It was all like like the original Woodstock, not Woodstock 3. Woodstock 3, they make like, oh my God, I'm back. Right, the original Woodstock, everyone's just getting along. It's like a million people, everything was good. No, but they portray it as, you know, the reality is it was more like Woodstock 3. I show that documentary, I forget what that's called, on the Woodstock. I guess it would be, it wasn't 94, 2004, maybe? 2004? Yeah, there wasn't one in 2014, so it had to be 2004. Like Woodstock 3, I guess it would be. Yeah, what a mess that was. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Yeah, you have to see that documentary. I can't even begin to describe it here. All right, so here we go. Columbus is innocent of most of the charges against him. Christopher Columbus was not perfect, but he is innocent of most of, his alleged crimes. Indeed, Columbus was most likely benign in his interaction with native populations. While deprivations did occur, Columbus was quick to punish those under his command who committed unjust acts against local populations. Columbus did not engage in any savage acts that have been on him. In addition, Columbus strictly told the crew not to do things like maraud, rape, and instead to treat the native peoples with respect. There are many examples in his writings where he gave instructions to this effect. Most of the time when injustices occurred, Columbus wasn't even there. There was a terrible disease that got communicated to the natives, but he can't be blamed for that. Yeah, I think the smallpox and various other diseases that were brought over from Europe. It's just a fact. The native population was not immune. Their immune systems were not prepared for some of the stuff that that got brought over from Europe. That's, again, just a fact. A sad fact, but true. And five. This is reason number five. The last reason. Historical figures should be viewed in the light of their greatest achievements, not their worst mistakes. Lastly, I would contend that historical figures should be honored for their great achievements and not their mistakes or weaknesses. We should honor George Washington as the indispensable man for his military bravado and skilled leadership as our first president, even though he owned slaves. Likewise, Thomas Jefferson, also a slave owner, should be remembered for writing one of the most brilliant documents in the history of mankind. He lifted a lot of stuff from like John Locke and a lot of the other Enlightenment guys. Let's not kid ourselves. But anyway, he put it all in one spot. So, yeah, we'll give it to him. The Declaration of Independence, which contributed greatly to the ending of slavery and segregation in the United States. Not so sure about that. Okay. If we cannot honor anyone in human history that did not have flaws or imperfections, we cannot honor anybody at all. Though flawed, Columbus was a great man with an adventurous spirit, sailing the seas to prepare to establish a new world. In short, today is Christopher Columbus Day, and we should celebrate that. This would be Monday. When was this written? This is probably a couple of years old. This was 2019, so yeah, this is a couple of years old. But I agree. I concur 100%. Let me get that one. Hang on. I got another drink. I don't know what's going on with my chest. I don't know. Probably dinner. Okay, and this is the Greater New Haven Italian American Heritage Committee. Why we should celebrate Columbus Day. Columbus Day recognizes the achievements of a great Renaissance explorer who founded the first permanent European settlement in the New World. The arrival of Columbus in 1492 marks the beginning of recorded history in America and opened relations between the Americas and the rest of the world. Columbus Day celebrates the beginning of a cultural exchange between America and Europe. After Columbus, millions of European immigrants brought their art, music, science, medicine, philosophy, and religious principles to America. These contributions have helped shape the United States and include Greek democracy, Roman law, Judeo-Christian ethics, very questionable, and the belief that all men are created equal. Columbus is one of America's old, Columbus Day is one of America's oldest holidays. The tradition of observing Columbus Day dates back to the 18th century in this country. And it was first celebrated on October 12, 1792, when the New York Society of Tammany honored Columbus on the 300th anniversary of his voyage. The New York Society of Tammany, none other than Tammany Hall. Interestingly enough, Columbus Day is a patriotic holiday. In fact, the Pledge of Allegiance was written in 1892 in honor of the 400th anniversary of his first voyage. That year, President Benjamin Harris declared Columbus Day a legal holiday. The United States long admired Columbus. America has more monuments to Columbus than any other nation in the world, according to the Christopher Columbus Encyclopedia. These include a Columbus statue in Providence, Rhode Island, cast by Frederick Augusta Bertholdi. That's the one that I'm talking about, who created the Statue of Liberty. Yeah, it's in storage. It got boxed because of the Pinkos got all the brownskins riled up, and then the next thing you know. So one in New York City created by one of the six Priscilla brothers who carved the Lincoln Monument. The United States has a significant collection of Columbus memorabilia, including his desk, papers, and the cross he used to claim the New World for Spain. Wow. These are in the Columbus Chapel in Bowlesburg, Pennsylvania. In 1905, Colorado became the first state to declare Columbus Day a holiday. In 1971, Columbus Day became a federal holiday in all 50 states after Congress passed the law declaring the second Monday in October Columbus Day. Columbus Day also commemorates the arrival on the shores of more than 5 million Italians beginning in 1880. Today, the children and grandchildren of these early Italians, early Italian Americans, constitute the nation's fifth largest ethnic group, according to the U.S. Census Bureau. That's amazing. Here's a little Christopher Columbus biography, a little short thing here. Okay, 1451, Christopher Columbus is born in Genoa to Domenico Colombo and his wife, Susanna. They were weavers who lived above their small shop. At the time, Genoa was a naval power, an independent republic that rivaled Venice and traded it with the Orient. In 1453, 2 years after Columbus's birth, Constantinople fell to the Muslims, cutting off Europe's eastward trade routes to the Orient and making the finding of a westward route imperative. Damn Moors. In 1465, Columbus takes his first sea voyage at age 14. Later studies navigation in Greece and map making in Portugal, where he lives for 9 years in a colony of Genoese businessmen and shippers. He also travels to Africa, Ireland, England, and Iceland. In 1479, Columbus marries Filippa Pesteroli, has a son, Diego, and is widowed in 1480. Later has another son, Fernando, with Beatriz and Enrique de Harana, whom he never marries. Columbus presents his plan to reach the Orient by sailing west across the Atlantic to the kings of Portugal, England, France, and Spain. Only Spain's King Ferdinand and Queen Isabel accept his offer, but it takes Columbus 6 years to convince them to underwrite his explorations. 1492. On August 3rd, Columbus sails from Palos, Spain. On October 12th, at 2 o'clock in the morning, land sighted. Deeply religious Columbus believes that one of his missions was to bring Christianity to the New World. Okay. All right. That's interesting. Columbus takes his last voyage across the ocean. He crossed the Atlantic 4 times in 10 years, 1492, 1493, 1498, and 1502. On his first voyage, he lands on Haiti and the Dominican Republic, which he calls Hispaniola, where he founds the first permanent European settlement in the Western Hemisphere. On his third voyage, his political enemies bring him back to Spain in chains, but the queen absolves him of any blame. On his fourth voyage, he was shipwrecked for nearly a year on what is today called Jamaica. Didn't know that. In 1506, Columbus dies in Valavolda, Spain, on May 20 at the age of 54. He insists on being buried with the chains he wore when he was brought back to Spain following his third voyage. No one is sure where he is buried, and some scholars believe his remains are in the lighthouse of Santo Domingo in the Dominican Republic, while others believe they are in Spain at the Cathedral of Seville. So, there's a... I think that's all I got. That's all I got on Columbus, other than the feelings. And like I said, it's very important, the Italian-American aspect of things. Very important and very personal to me. Again, as some of you, or if not all of you by now, know, I was raised by Italians. And Columbus Day, being at this time of year, it's close to the San Gennaro feasts and whatnot on 18th Avenue. It's just all part of that whole, you know, swipe. And there's no, I don't understand why Italian Americans can't have a day of pride. I fail to understand. You know, are we going to change history and all of a sudden Christopher Columbus didn't discover the Americas? Is that what we're going to do? We're going to change things that we don't like? There's a lot of unpleasantries attached to history. All of it makes us who we are. For better or for worse, makes us who we are. And we hopefully are improving. Hopefully. Granted, it takes time, but hopefully we are improving. You know, it's do this to Columbus is the exact same thing that they've tried to do to Southern culture in regards to Confederate statues, you know. And where is it going to stop? Where is it going to stop? Are we building up to attacking people like Jefferson and George Washington? Is that where we're headed? Is that what they want? What's the final conquest? What do the Pinkos want? What do they want? What do they want to do to American history? What's the game? I don't understand how they expect, you know, a nation to move forward where it can't accept what its history was. You know, I hate that expression, but it is what it is. You can't change history. You know, the only way you can change history is if you rewrite history, if you change the narrative entirely. And now it's no longer history. Now it's just some sort of, it's propaganda. Whether it be from the left or whether it be from the right. It seems to me that the left is more interested in changing history than the right is at this point in time. But I could be wrong about that. But all I can tell you is, regardless of what happens, LF Midwood will always celebrate Columbus Day on the second Monday in October. Done. All right. So that's all I got to say about Columbus Day. And I'm cooking again. I'm going to cook. They're going to give me a knife, and they're going to let me play with fire, and we're going to see what happens. I am actually a pretty good cook. What else do I have? So I got rid of that. What's this? Speaking of the left, this was, of all places, Newsweek. It was an opinion piece by Jenny Holland this week, author of Saving Culture, the Saving Culture Substack newsletter. So I guess that's a thing. It's an opinion piece. And the left is demonizing pulpists for pushing what the left once believed. Earlier this year, comedian-turned-podcaster Russell Brand interviewed Thomas Frank, the long-standing liberal defender of American pulpism. For a man who has spent several decades imploring liberals to listen to what working-class and rural Americans are saying, in this instance, he failed to heed his own advice. When asked by Brand about the contemporary American pulpist movement, as represented by Steve Bannon, Frank replied, "In my opinion, there's no such thing as right-wing pulpism. There are people who mimic it, and Steve Bannon and Donald Trump would be people I would list. But pulpism is a Jeffersonian tradition in American life. It is a democratic left-wing movement. It's about building mass movement, transracial movements of working-class people for economic democracy. That is what it is, and that is what it's always been. With one statement, Frank brushed off the closest thing to our current movement has to be a democratic, transracial mass movement of working class people. He dismissed the only serious counterweight to woke corporate hegemony. He denigrated contemporary working class movements that are far closer to the wobbles of the early 20th century labor battles than are to the black or brown shirts of the dark days of European fascism. Sadly, Frank is not an aberration, but an example par excellence of a type of thinking that has taken hold of the left, namely conflating being left-wing with moral goodness to the extent that they are anything non-left-wing is moral evil. Thanks to this line of thinking, the left has taken to seeing the actual populist movements rising up across the globe as a threat, though these right-wing populist movements embody a broad coalition of non-elites advocating for themselves against powerful governments and corporations, in other words, the very thing that the left is supposed to itself embody. Confronted with right-wing-inspired populist movements like parents showing up at school meetings in Virginia, truckers protesting in Canada, and BritEx voters in the north of England, people of all races who do not simply want their basic fundamental values transgressed, the left only sees white supremacists, fascists, and racists. Even the word populism, pulpism, is more often than not preceded with adjectives like far right and extremist in mainstream liberal media. The result is a truly tragic missed opportunity for solidarity between the left and the right, but it's also proof of how far the left has fallen from its mission. After all, what is a populist movement if not someone who stands for fairness for the little guy, a level economic playing field, financial reform, scaling back of excessive government power, and a rejection of absolutist ideologies? These were once left-wing values. Now the left systematically portrays the grassroots populism movements springing up across the world to address these issues as white supremacist far-right actors. The broad brush character assassination has reached the highest levels of power, as evidenced by President Joe Biden's speech last week denouncing MAGA Republicans in Philadelphia. The most chilling thing the president said was not the accusation of fascism against its political opposition, but rather his revealing statement that he can only work with mainstream Republicans. Biden wants you to think that he is cutting out semi-fascist MAGA wing, as he called them a few weeks ago, but what he's actually doing is cutting out the populist wing. Biden was essentially saying to any American looking for real reform, you are my enemy. That should have alarmed the liberal left as much as it did the right, yet the left mostly embraced the speech. Like Thomas Frank, if you're not left, you can't possibly be on the side of good. Ergo, the thinking goes, you're on the side of fascists. They let themselves get away with this because they don't know how to listen. Former Bernie Sanders spokesman Breonna Joy Gray acknowledged this a few weeks ago as she tried to patiently explain in an interview with progressive journalist Cenk Uygur at the Young Turks that it might well be a wise for the left to recognize the difference between sworn political adversary, she mentioned Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene, and the ordinary men and women who support Greene, in case the left might want to win them over. In response, Uygur spent most of his interview berating Gray, calling her and others like her willing to speak to the people on the side of the fake leftists. She described progressive Uygur and his Young Turks, self-described progressive, I never say this right, Uygur and his Young Turks show are left-wing equivalent of the Pulpus Bannon's War Room, a popular podcast that reaches millions. But Uygur is far less smart and less effective, in part because, unlike Bannon, he has no crossover appeal. He can only have a civil discussion with his own side. Meanwhile, Bannon welcomes to his show with open arms prominent left-wing figures like Naomi Wolf. For many who feel besieged by insane political rhetoric and personal attacks, any genuine cross-party discussion feels like sanity. But now Bannon is facing a host of charges over a border wall fundraising scheme that Trump pardoned him for, something he has cast as an attempt to silence him. Whatever the legal technicalities of the case turn out to be, it is for it to come to the same political culture that it overlooked the evidence of Hunter Biden's corruption means that Bannon's prosecution will simply provide further proof to his fellow pulpists that the state is intent on making an enemy out of them. I like the War Room a whole lot. I really do. I don't watch it as much as I should, because it's on daily, several times daily. I could just kind of sit there and get her and just click, 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 click. But unfortunately, I have other things to do. But I should start to watch at least the main segment, I think, whatever the main produced segment, in which I think is like an hour and change or whatever, just to touch base with Bannon. Because I really do, I really enjoy him, and I really do enjoy the show, outside of all the other stuff. And you can get to that through Getter, and I guess, I don't know what the War Room's URL is, but Getter would be a good place to start. Okay, it's pretty amazing to those who dare point out that, it's a pretty amazing thing to see that those who dare point out the Uniparty, who hold both Democrats and Republicans responsible for policies that benefit only the rich and the corporations, are attacked by not the right, but the left. This tactic prevents a serious, effective, partisan, people-led opposition, and who benefits from that? That's a great question. So, hang on. Yeah. My tablet's doing strange things. It's an excellent point. You know, I've always considered myself to be a pulpist in that sense. I've always enjoyed, even Perot when I was younger, I thought was kind of interesting, and he was a bit on the pulpy side. If not, you know, if it weren't for that guy's ego, and he maybe founded another party, particularly one with a pulpist bent, American politics may be very difficult. You know, maybe very, very difficult. Very different. Wow, maybe I do need the weed. Than they look today. Not for nothing. Very rarely do you have, you know, a person rising above the people. You could arguably, you know, look at things from a standpoint of. When I look at President Trump and I say to myself, you know, again, I was kind of shocked that he ran as a Republican. I would have assumed he would have run as an independent or possibly had enough chops to be able to get his own party off the ground. And I think that would lean towards pulpist, and not so much, the sad monster that the GOP has become. I think the president was in Nevada tonight, by the way, giving another speech, President Trump. Every week he's out there, every week, working double time because of the midterms. But he's out there every week. I think that's all I got. Let me see. I'm trying to think if there's anything that was going on this week that I'm not really. I had a real quiet week for the most part. Like I said, been going to counseling. I saw my shrink this week. My meds are all good. I've been taking my meds. I've been doing a lot of reading lately on people who go off their meds and like really bad things happen. And I can tell you when I've needed to go off my psych meds when I've been sick, meaning when I've been sick to my stomach and I had this, whatever this secular vomiting thing is, and I'm not able to take my meds for 4 or 5 days, things get really weird. I mean, and like uncomfortably so. I can't pinpoint which med it is specifically. I would like to know, you know, so I could always kind of make arrangements to stay on that one. because yeah, it's not a good feeling. It's definitely not a good feeling. And was this Mental Health Awareness Week? I don't know. I think I read something about that. I'm not 100% sure. I know I didn't put anything up on my Facebook. Facebook seems to be the only thing that I've remained reasonably active on. I haven't really been paying attention too much to my other social media, and I should start doing that. I have to find some sort of balance, you know, once I'm no longer weed free, between smoking a little weed and being able to pay attention to what's going on around me, because I probably have the most uninformed news and current events show on the internet. I would think if I had to speculate, if I had to take a guess, I would say that's the case. But I am charming and reasonably entertaining, so we can overlook that. I'm only going to stick for about another five. Let me get the LF Midwood page up. There it is. So yeah, if you wanna delve deeper again, it's lfmidwood.com. I feel to a large degree I'm preaching to the choir, but I do the plugs every week anyway. The only way this show, the only way this show is going to expand, if the listenership is going to expand, is through word of mouth. So if you like the show, suggest it to someone. Perhaps invite them to your house and tie them up and play it. Like the most recent copy. Yeah. So, that being said, lfmidwood.com is all things LF Midwood. The Midwood Files lives there. That's where it stays. Up on the right-hand side is show links and archives. You click that, and I believe that takes you back over to John Lightning's archives, meaning the my archives over on 11LRNI. Underneath that is my regular archives. Now, these are archives that have the cute little blurbs that the producer put so much work into. You'll see archives, and you'll see a drop-down menu, and basically we go back to October 2016. Yeah, that's how long, what is it, four, is it 6 years? It'll be 6 years on Halloween. Yeah, boy, I tell you. I think it's the longest I've gone in a row, consistently, without leaving or just getting disgusted and stopping, which is not happening. I'm feeling okay. Like I said, I've got small goals, baby steps. So I made the second show of October. Yay. Underneath that, you'll find my Take the Red Pill. That's my social media. Links to my Facebook and Twitter and such. On the end, I believe there's a email thing there. Yeah. And there's a little telephone, and you can hit that, and you can either call or text me. There's voicemail attached to that. So go directly to voicemail, because I don't pick up that line without screening. And underneath that is my favorites, and that's a lot of websites that I use to shape the show to one degree or another. And you'll find also a couple of few of the social medias that aren't available under the Take the Red Pill section. I think Getter is there, Gab is there. I've had issues finding a little. I want to redo this, but it's work. It's a lot of work, and I don't want to. So one of these days, I'm going to have to sit down and kind of clean that whole thing up a little bit. But that being said, if you go to the top of the page, 11LRNI, and those will take you. That'll take you over to John Lightning's website. And you'll have John Lightning's archives and Big Steve Cole in memoriam and Dave the Boogeyman. And go all the way to the right, you find Grits Radio. It's a good friend, Brad Reed, who replays the show on his Grits Radio stream. Much appreciated, Brad. That's it, I think. I don't think I have anything else. I hope you all have a nice Columbus Day. If you're Italian, then stay home and cook. If you're not, go out to an Italian restaurant. And I was at Marchetti's again this week. Oh man, I got the chicken siciliano. Now there's I forget the place in Staten Island that I go to with JL, and they have the steak siciliano. And the only thing that the two dishes have in common are the pepperoncinis. The green hot peppers there on top, because the chicken siciliano over at Marchetti's has red pepper and olives. It's ridiculously good. And the Steak Feliciano over at the other joint, which is, what, again, I remember the name of that restaurant, is like out of this world. I was thinking about asking them if they could do it with a steak, but I don't think they'd kind of look at me funny, I guess, you know? So, Feliciano is apparently a style of cooking, and it varies from place to place. Who would have guessed? Who would have guessed? Anyway, I'm out of here. I will be back next week. It'll be three in a row. Haven't done that in a while. Three in a row. And this mouse is acting funny. Yeah. Great. I'm out of here. And wait. Let's see. Did I load this? Oh, yeah. That was also almost a major fuck up. All right. I'm out of here, folks. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Midwood Files on Radio New York International. Thanks for listening.